This podcast is brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Welcome to this Deepbridge Discovery podcast. My name's Andrew Aldridge. I'm partner and head of marketing at Deepbridge Capital. The idea of these podcasts is to bring to life the people and the companies behind Deepbridge Capital, the companies we invest in and the teams that support those companies. I'm delighted today to be joined by Andrew Needham, who's CEO and founder of Headbox Solutions Limited, one of our investee companies within the Deepbridge Technology Growth EIS. So Andrew, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, brilliant to see you. Starting with Headbox, can you just give us a bit of a background to kind of setting up Headbox and kind of the kind of rationale behind that and kind of where you're aiming to go with that?
Yeah, so I think the whole idea for Headbox started back in 2014, really, when I was the CEO of my previous company that I set up. Was a social intelligence company.
Okay.
It was called Face, and we developed our own social intelligence platform and called Pulsar, which was an enterprise piece of software. And one of the things that we had to do back then was the data that we were bringing back through this, through our platform, the insights that we were bringing back meant that we were in a great position to help brands solve either innovation problems, brand problems, communication problems. And sometimes we had to bring them together.
Yeah.
In a room, in a really cool, inspiring space to help analyze that data and then come up with ideas to solve some of their problems. And it was while I was running that business and while I was doing that for major clients like Unilever, Nokia, some big FMCG companies, that I just noticed how really painful it was. And I think we've all been here, all your listeners will be sitting here going, well, how many times have we had to organize an event where we start with where is a really cool space that I can bring my customers or I can bring my employees to? And I think that whole process I found really challenging and difficult. You know, very quickly, you're on the phone, you've got, you know, post-it notes around you, trips to the photocopier, scanner, printer, and I was just blown away how, even back then, when so many other parts of our life had been been digitized, that the world of events was still so antiquated.
It was still, I mean, obviously working in marketing myself, you know, done thousands of events over the years, and I think the key thing that I personally noticed Headbox kind of solves, because we have used Headbox as you'd expect, is that instantaneousness of it, or that speeding up the inquiries coming back from venues. You know, I think when you've been organising events in the past, you'll email a venue or speak to somebody and say, I'll email it over to you. And it can be 2 or 3 days before you get a response, and you sat there, you know, not knowing what you're doing. Whereas with Headbox, you get what you want back in a very expeditious manner, which just helps you with the whole planning process.
No, and I think, obviously now we've actually framed those problems. I mean, that was just me, you know, at my desk, putting my hair out, going, absolutely, God, is this really as painful as it needs to be? And I think you touch on an area there. One of the key problems that we're solving is around efficiency.
Yeah.
Just the lack of efficiency and how really I think people are getting in the way of tasks that machines and software really should, you know, should be doing and do a better job. So I think efficiency was one big problem that I noticed. I found another big problem that I noticed was trying to find, you know, really cool, quirky, creative, unique spaces all in one place.
Yep.
I think that was really difficult. The other problem that I think that really stood out for me was there was a complete lack of data aggregation, because so many of the processes were manual. It meant that you weren't able to collect data in one place and to apply some of the smart, clever things we can now do through AI. And I think the final problem that I nearly noticed at that time, as very much as an outsider looking in, was lack of price transparency. You just had no idea what everything cost. So I was quite excited. I mean, I've got to say, I was really excited. I didn't I realized that the quite quickly at the time, wow, there's some big problems here that haven't been solved through software and tech. And I think that's always a good place to start. If you can notice some big problems that, and there's a massive market for it as well, that I think was really exciting.
And I think that's, when we often talk about kind of companies and criteria for who we invest in, et cetera, yeah, we see so many people with great ideas, but it's actually about solving a real life problem. And I think that's that you've got to have the solution to a problem. It can't just be a crazy harebrained idea. It's got to be actually solving a problem. And I think you're actually spot on. And again, from my personal experiences, I can see all those traits in trying to book venues over the years. Absolutely. So how has the company evolved, and kind of what does the company look like now, and kind of who you're working with and things like that?
Well, I think it's safe to say that I may have founded the company six years ago, but I'm very much supported and joined by three co-founders now, my CFO Lucy Lowry, and my CRO Charlie Marr, and my CTO Gavin, and those three people I think together with myself I think have really helped take the business a massive step forward to achieving our mission of bringing people and spaces together to make brilliant things happen everywhere. And so I think it's important to say that is a big thing, how the business, one area, I think the business has changed just with, there's now 65 of us. So we've grown, but I think the leadership and management team that we have in place has got a huge amount of experience. I think that's been a really important development, obviously, since the early days.
Absolutely. And did you start off with like a London-centric focus, obviously being
Yeah, we did. We started off with a London-centric focus. And I think one of the big things that I think has changed in the beginning is I really thought that solving some of those problems that I mentioned that I noticed could be easily done by linking the demand and supply very much with an online marketplace model. Mm-hmm. And I think I realized probably within the first year quite quickly how that that sort of Airbnb style search, book and pay was not going to work. And I think what I realized really quickly was to solve those problems for essentially the two different customer sets, the B2C customer, there's you or I when we're out there booking events for our celebratory, parties or things that we do for ourselves personally, which we call B2C. And then there's the whole meeting and events programs that are in place and driven by, large corporates. Yep. And although those four problems I mentioned are similar between those two customers, they absolutely needed different software solutions. Yep. And I think that was the biggest, the biggest change, I think, since those early days, where I just thought we could have this idea of an online marketplace that could solve those problems for those two different customer sets would work. And I think we've really now understood how similar problems for different customers need different solutions. And I think that's where we've got our two separate pieces of software in LeadFeed, which is aimed at that B2C customer, and Headbox Business, which is our software aimed at the B2B customer, are really gaining massive traction.
And in layman's terms, i.e. for me, what's the kind of difference between the two elements then?
So I think the first, when we look at LeadFeed, what we've done with that piece of software is we've turned that search, book and pay model that you're very familiar yep. with Airbnb, we've turned it on its head. So we just want to drive you to our homepage, which you'll see. Yep. And it says, stop searching and let the perfect venue find you. Yep. So we've just turned it on its head. You put in your details in this, what we call this brief builder, literally takes 2 minutes. And then that brief drops down into a live feed of leads that host venues then log into. Every morning they log into and they decide which leads they want to respond to, because they've looked at their availability, they've looked at their budget, they've looked at the style that you're looking. Yep. And then the first eight that respond to your brief, to that lead, are the ones that you get to see. And you then choose one of those eight, and then we match you up, a bit like Tinder, we match you and then we step away. And we felt that that model, that B2C model, that you're dealing with high volume, low value transactions for your personal events, and so you really need a pure SaaS, no touch service. And then on the B2B side, you're then having to organize events for big corporates like Accenture, L'Oreal, Sky. These are all our customers, and they want you to organize anything from a meeting or a private dining room at one end, where the complexity can be quite low, the price point can be like quite low, to their summer party, their Christmas party, to a massive conference. And so the software that we've built, Headbox Business, really does help those large corporates to plan, book and manage their entire meetings and events program, and give them the visibility to stay in control of what they're spending, who is spending what, where and for how much. And I think it's that piece that isn't, you know, it's a different customer, it's an enterprise sell. But I think the level of complexity and the size of the events you're dealing with those corporates is different from that B2C model.
And I guess, you know, talking about the B2C side in particular, you know, the fact that the first eight kind of venues can pitch for the business, if you like, that in itself breeds and encourages good behavior in terms of that efficiency, that expediting of responding, etc. So I guess that kind of drives behavior.
It really does. We look at London, and now, so 96% of all leads get messaged. And when we were looking at the competitor set who do it the old way, the number of the percentage of your briefs or your leads when you were messaging venues was literally less than 10%.
Right.
So there's a massive increase that night. So you get messaged, so you know then that venues are interested. And we're now looking at London, almost 30% now of briefs and venues are getting matched.
Right.
And that is huge, because we're obviously doing our job as, you know, very much as a proactive sales tool. That's how these hosts see LeadFeed, as a proactive sales tool that can help them fill gaps in their inventory, in their across the week or the month or the year. And we're seeing massive ROI from that. So and very high return rates of customers. That obviously we've had COVID, so the numbers are quite low in terms of, because we're comparing to last year.
Yep.
But the engagement with LeadFeed is really strong. I mean, I'll just say one good indicator. So our monthly recurring revenue back in, we were talking September, October, was like 11K. You would expect it to be really low because we were coming out of COVID. By the end of Q1, that had grown to 400. That monthly recurring revenue had grown to nearly 40K. So it quadrupled. The annual recurring revenue gone from just, you know, from 100 to 450. Brilliant. Actually, the run rate we're on now is 1.5 million just from that side of the business alone.
Brilliant. So a real step change. Two points from just what you've been talking about. You mentioned kind of competitors and the competitive landscape. Are a lot of your competitors still very much old school then? Is that kind of very undigital, if you like?
Well, I think it's really interesting to talk about our competitors. So on that B2C side, our competitor set are those digital competitors that came into the market with this Airbnb model, thinking, oh, we can just link supply and demand together, just like Airbnb did in their sector, and we'll have a successful business. And that just didn't work. And it didn't work because ultimately that solution didn't solve the problems for those high volume, low value bookings. That model didn't work. So they really struggled to find customer product fit. And because of that, they really have struggled to find a sustainable commercial model. Yep. That's why we're very excited that we've got a very differentiated product for that B2C opportunity. And then on the B2B side, none of those B2C players went into that B2B space, which we did. And the B2B competitor set are those traditional, as you say, those traditional event management companies that are solving those problems that I talked about, with people picking up telephones. And these are people that the likes of Accenture and L'Oreal, the event management companies put two or three people in Accenture's office to ring round venues, to send you emails, to do things on spreadsheets and emails in this very antiquated way. And it's those traditional event management companies, the Bank Sadler, the HRG, that we are disrupting, because they have not invested in software, they've not invested in tech, they're not solving those problems through software. And that's why last year we won Accenture, we won Sky, we won Investec, we won L'Oreal, and we're taking that, those huge customers. If we talk about Accenture, they spent 7 million on meetings and events in 2019. We won that customer from Bank Sadler. It didn't even make it to the RFP, to the final pitch. We're taking business away from those traditional event management companies.
Brilliant. And then, you know, the second thing you mentioned there is COVID, obviously. It's all around us. I had COVID last week, so it's still very much here. We're not post COVID yet. The world is kind of getting back to normal, and I guess that's a great news for the events industry itself. So kind of, as well as COVID, etc., what are the opportunities in the market, and why is now kind of the great time for you, if you like?
Yeah, and look, I think you might think is this you're in meetings and events, is this an exciting sector and time to be in this space? And oh my gosh, is it an exciting time to be in this sector? And I'll tell you why, because there are two areas here. One is meetings and events have changed forever because of COVID. So when we talk to our customers, they are telling us four or five big things that have changed as a result of COVID. The first is that they're having to do much, much more with less people, less budget, less resources. Secondly, they are having to do more with less while having more focus on ROI. So that whole data piece is crucially important now to see how they're getting return on events and return on investment. There's increased complexity because you now have face-to-face, virtual and hybrid, you have different formats. And finally, you have to do all of this with a dispersed workforce.
Absolutely.
And that last point, I think, is key, because the future of work has changed. The role of that physical, of the physical office, the physical workplace has changed. It's no longer going to be the place historically where we've always built our company culture in the office. But if we're not coming to the office as often, it means that we really now do need to think, when we do come together, how we can make those occasions much more of an event, make it much more memorable, much more of an experience. And I think that is a real positive for us when we look at the unique creative spaces that we have on our platform, really meets that.
Are you seeing that as a key driver, that those kind of team bonding or team kind of getting together kind of
sessions? Because look at Airbnb. They just launched on the 28th of April. They just launched their work from anywhere. Yep. And one of the four key policies was they talk about how we're really going to focus on bringing people together. If we're working in different places, how we really need to think and plan about bringing people together to keep that company culture, to keep the collaboration, all of those things that are really important that we know when we come together, in person. So I think that's really important. But I think fundamentally, when you bring those changes together, why is it exciting now? Is because if you want to do more with less, if you have increased complexity, if you do now need to make your meetings more engaging and more memorable, then you need software. You need a platform that really helps you do the heavy lifting.
You also need the right venues, as you're suggesting. You need those interesting venues. You know, it's no longer that you can take people for a curly sandwich in a Hilton kind
absolutely it's not good enough. But we have, what's great on our platform is we've done all the hard work and we have that all in one place, with 20,000 beautiful space, creative, unique, inspiring spaces across the UK, now in Australia, and also we've done that work for Amsterdam, for Holland, and for Ireland. So we have all of that in one place, but we also now have developed the tools and the software that really helps these, particularly when we talk about the corporates, really helps them do this heavy lifting, deal with this complexity. And you need AI, you need machine learning, absolutely, you need to have aggregated all of that data in one place. And then apply your software to that. And we've done all that.
And also, you alluded to kind of the internal reporting off the back of that for your clients. I mean, the fact that they've got it all in one system, you know, it doesn't mean it's spread across numerous spreadsheets and what have you. That, you know, it's all easy there and easy to manage.
No, exactly. And I think that's another big part of Headbox Business is how we bring the full data set together in a really beautiful way so that the procurement customer. We have two really within our business corporates. We have two customer sets: the people that use it, and obviously then the people that want to monitor and check everything, which is procurement. And they love it because they can get access to the full data set across their entire meetings and events program, and we visualize that for them really well and help them analyze it. And I think that's a big selling factor, USP for our software for the procurement side of these big corporates.
And I guess part of one of the key things for you is to make sure, I guess, you've got a team looking after, making sure you've got the right venues on there, you've got the best venues. You know, I guess that's a key drive. You've got to have the right product to sell at the end of the day.
Yeah, and we have a host acquisition team that really look on that supply side. And then we have, on the demand side, we have a customer success team, client services team, that really then look after these big corporates, make sure that we onboard them properly, and make sure they understand how the different users within our customer set, how to use the software and to drive that engagement. And I think that is something that we take very seriously and have invested in as we've come out of COVID, because we won all this business and we just want to make sure we service it really well.
Absolutely. That's key. So what kind of looking forward, what are your kind of hopes, objectives the next 12 months or kind of next 12 to 3 years, I guess, 12 months to 3 years?
So, and I think, you know, for some of your listeners, I think this is, they'll be glad to hear this, what I'm about to say for the next 12 months.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah, they will. because we're very focused about three key goals in the next 12 months. The first is to get to EBITDA profitability. Yep. And we are a year away from doing that. And I think when I look at where our performance in Q1, we did our biggest sales month in March. We did over 300K of sales. That's getting our run rate to 3.6 million, all the way to the end of this year to getting a run rate to 5 million plus. So I'm feeling really confident about that. And if we do that, it puts the business in a very good place to achieve that goal of EBITDA profitability by May next year. And then once we hit EBITDA profitability, the next key goal, which follows quite quickly from that, is to become cash flow positive. Yep. And that comes 3 or 4 months later. And that's another big goal that we have within the next 12, 18 months. Brilliant. And then the third key focus for the business is our margin. And already, as we're coming out of the pandemic, our margins have grown from 47% now to 63%. And our goal is to have it to reach 76% gross margin by the end of this year. And we're on track to deliver that. So these are all, I think, very important indicators in the current climate, that we're focused on profitability, cash and margins.
And are you expecting kind of that plus kind of going back to the COVID question, are you kind of expecting the events market to continue growing? I guess, you know, is it back to pre-COVID levels now for events wise, or is it going to, are you expecting to continue to grow to get back to where it was and growth beyond that? And is that kind of all factored into your kind of your financials, et cetera?
I think what's exciting about Headbox is there is so much market share. If you just put the macro situation to one side, there is so much market share for us to take and that we're proving we're taking it. So it doesn't really matter what's going on in the world, because there's a big chunk of business for us to go and win. And we've proved it on that business side by winning Accenture, L'Oreal, Sky and Accenture. And I think that is only going to accelerate. Those customers have also done very well. As you know, half the pandemic is still doing very well. They're in those professional services spaces, a lot of our customer base. So I think we're excited about that. I think when we look at the wider what's happening in this event sector, as you said at the beginning, we have all... we've all wanted to meet and come back face to face. If you look at one of the darlings of the COVID period, Hopin, that raised a huge amount of money, about $1 billion, because they went into that virtual space during COVID. there were 15,000 events going on in their Explore platform at any one time. And today there are now 500. So I think that this, you know, the virtual space, there is still a market, I think, for virtual. Yep. I think it's more in that education and learning space.
Yep.
But I just don't think that opportunity, and we didn't go down that route. We looked at it and we said, we're just going to focus on solving problems in this in-person, face-to-face space. And that has come back enormously. We are seeing the sort of numbers that we've seen in Q1 are 50% greater than what we were seeing in 2019.
Right.
And I think the acceleration of, you know, we are already at the end of Q1, we are already ahead in terms of our revenue run rate than we were at the end of 2019.
Brilliant. Good. No, it sounds extremely exciting, time and extremely exciting place. I think ultimately, yeah, we have been talking in the financial service industry. You know, there's been so many kind of webinars, ironically, we've been on over the last kind of 12 months about when to get back into face-to-face events and you know, how to do that in a kind of a conscious manner and make sure people, everyone feels safe, etc. But ultimately, the overarching thing was that, yes, everyone wants to get back to face-to-face events. Yeah, we're humans at the end of the day and we need social interaction. That's, yeah, we are social beings. So I can imagine that, you know, it's only going to continue to grow over the coming years as people appreciate the value of events as well.
And I think they do. And I think the CEOs of these companies, when you think about what is a face in person event designed to do, it is designed to attract, you know, new customers, retain, and it's winning and retaining, you know, customers, and it's attracting and retaining your people and events, and that in-person connection in both of those areas is still as strong as it ever was.
Yeah.
And I think we've appreciated it even more because I think we've spent the last 2 years behind a screen.
Absolutely. No, it's been great the last 12 months, just getting back to sporting events and what have you as well. I mean, it's superb. So with these podcasts, we also like to give kind of our listeners and viewers kind of a little bit of a feel about the people behind the companies that we invest in. So kind of just tell us a little bit about your personal interests away from work.
I'm married and coming up to my 25th wedding anniversary. So big year.
Well done you.
Yeah. So I'm very excited about that. And I've got three kids, Jack, Louie, and Nell. And I'd say that my family are a big part of my life and what I do.
Yep.
When I'm not hanging out with my family, then I like to run, I like to swim, and I like to cycle. So I have become a mammal. I wasn't a mammal before COVID.
Yeah.
But I did. I've been during COVID. I bought a bike mainly because I've run my whole life, but I just started to get injured. I'm swimming a lot and run a lot. That's what I do to try and
keep. You sound like a triathlete in training. That's what it sounds like. But
yeah, I haven't done a triathlon, but I am doing the three sports. Yeah, I am.
Yeah,
I haven't just combined them together yet though.
No, very good. Very good. And then kind of the question I always love to ask all of our guests is, you know, the Deepbridge dinner party. You know, if you could invite three guests to join us for dinner, dead or alive, no family or friends, because we don't want to offend anybody, but who would they be and why?
Well, so when I was thinking about this, when I was thinking about a dinner party, I was thinking about having who would I invite? But I was thinking my family would be there.
Yep.
So my wife and my children would be there, but who would I invite? So.
Yep.
So I thought my first invitation would be to Ruth Bader Ginsburg,
mm-hmm.
because I talk with my daughter a lot about the importance of being a strong, independent woman. And with my wife, we talk a lot about, and I think RBG, I think she, as you know, she was for a period of time, she was the only woman on the Supreme Court, big advocate of equal rights and women's rights. So I think she would be And she was just a massive inspiration, I think, as a female.
And also the story she must have about the political changes and legislative changes. She would be fascinating.
She really was. And you know, when you read about her life, she was a remarkable, remarkable woman. So that'd be my first invite.
And of course, you could also ask her about Trump as well, and that would probably just fill the dinner party in itself.
Yeah, exactly. You could just talk to her, you know, just have her on her own. That would fill the conversation massively. My second would be Marcus Aurelius, former Roman emperor. And I've just finished a book called The Daily Stoic, where I was, I touched on some of Marcus Aurelius' meditations, and I think the Stoic values of, you know, wisdom, justice, courage, and temperance, you can't go wrong. I think if you follow those four Stoic virtues. However, there's one, and this brings me on to my third guest, and because I think the one thing about the Stoics is they needed to have a bit more fun. They didn't have a great sense of fun.
No.
And so I would have Lee Mack.
Excellent.
I'd have Lee Mack on the table to bring a bit of humor. We all find him hilarious as a family. Yep. I think that would be a blend. And you'd expect me as an entrepreneur to not follow the rules completely. So I know you said only three. There's four, there would be a fourth, but he wouldn't they wouldn't be at the table. It would be Bono and U2 playing. Okay. It would be the music. They would be the music in the background, because that was the first live concert I went to go and see.
That's not a bad first gig, to be fair.
That's the first gig I went to go and see. So if I could get a personal invitation with him and he was playing the music, then they would be my three. They would be the three people I'd have around the table.
I mean, to be fair, I never said you couldn't invite your own musicians as well.
That's good. Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. I think that would be a very interesting conversation around the table. Anyway, I'm not sure what Marcus Aurelius would make of Lee Mack, but you know.
No, not sure.
Feed him to the lions, I think, but you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Well, Andrew, thank you very much for your time today. Really appreciate you joining us. And I look forward to catching up with you soon, and good luck to you and everyone at Headbox.
Thanks a lot, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. If you have any topics or subjects you'd like discussed in future podcasts, then please email us at discovery@deepridgecapital.com. This podcast was brought to you by Deepridge Capital LLP. Deepridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.